Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, rotten to the core, and cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you would like to join us in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. It is my pleasure to welcome back to this program one of our most frequent guests and my favorite person, IQ Al-Rasuli. He is my favorite person because he has the most courage and the most intelligence on the subject that is the most important, which is the nature of Islam, since Islam is responsible for all of today's current war, save one, and it is responsible for 99.9% of the world's terror. IQ, how are you this morning?
Fantastic. Good to hear your voice.
Good to be back. IQ, I wanted to start with the difference between the United States and the Obamanator and Israel and Netanyahu. But before I do, I would like to share a story that just appeared on the Newswire because I think it's related. Let me share it with you. With Russian aggression in eastern Ukraine continuing, by the way, I'm unaware of any Russian aggression in eastern Ukraine, the White House announced Wednesday that the U.S. will be training 750 Ukraine troops. The news came after a phone call between Vice President Joe Biden and Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, and decided that with the Russians celebrating the first anniversary of the country's annexation of Crimea, that the soldiers of the 173rd Airborne based in Italy, America's 173rd Airborne based in Italy, will conduct the training of the Ukrainian troops. We read further that it says that in Russia we always thought that the Russians and the Ukrainians were one nation. I think so now, Putin told tens of thousands of supporters outside the Kremlin in Moscow on Wednesday. How do you react to that?
Well, if Obama is looking for trouble, he can't go too far with them. Putin would destroy anybody in Western Europe, literally. And he said it in public. He said, do not mess with me. That means with Russia. Sure. Ukraine, always part of Russia or the Soviet Union, was sure. Always part. The Crimea to Russia is like Cuba to America. Literally.
Oh, well, it's actually, Crimea is more like Florida to America.
I'll accept that also, too. But what I'm saying is, yeah, it is the backyard. There is no way on earth they would have allowed the Obamanator or Europe to take over. By the way, the Europeans and the Americans cheated the Russians.
Yeah, they did.
Because when the Soviet Union collapsed, the agreement was for America not to encroach on the western border of Russia. But they did.
Correct. Yeah, you know, what's amazing here is that the Ukraine was part of Russia not just during the period of the USSR, which was fairly brief, you know, less than 100 years, but for many centuries prior to the USSR, all of the Ukraine was part of Russia. The Ukraine has never been an independent state, ever.
Correct.
It's either been amalgamated into Russia. There were times when it was amalgamated into Poland and into Germany. This was during the times of the Holy Roman Empire. But it was never an independent country. And the country that's meddling is the United States.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Continue. Nikita Khrushchev was a Ukrainian. And
yes,
he was the leader of the Soviet Union. So it was part and parcel of Russia.
Correct. And what's amazing here is that we're demanding a one state. Putin is saying the same thing. Let's just leave it as one state. Well, if it's one state, it's part of Russia.
Yes, I know. He can't understand that.
No. And here we don't have any evidence that the Russians have involved any of their troops in Ukraine.
If they had, there would have been no Ukraine today.
Well, it's true. Yeah, if they decided that they wanted to engage, the Kiev regime would be gone. And yet, we have provided first $25 billion, now another $15 billion in monies that are being largely spent to fund the Kiev aggression against Donetsk and Luhansk. And now we're going to be training troops. We're doing the very things we're falsely accusing the Russians of.
Correct, but Yada, where is this money coming from? Out of the trillions of dollars that are going to be bequeathed to the American future generations that they will never be able to pay back.
Well,
where is this money coming from?
America
is bankrupt to the tune of $17 trillion.
Yes, it's closer to $18 trillion now, and the fact is that it won't be given as a burden to future generations because it will cause America to collapse. America will not survive this. It cannot survive it. So the America's debt is already irrecoverable. But the fact of the matter is that here you've got a president that is the aggressor calling for one state in the Ukraine and now starting another war by training Ukrainian troops. I mean, you want to talk about belligerent. You want to talk about starting a war. I mean, I don't know how you could be more belligerent with the world's second largest military other than...
It's the foremost nuclear one, by the way, now. It's the foremost nuclear one.
Right.
Because America, under Obama, reduced its nuclear arsenal by a huge number.
Yeah. And so there you are. You're going to train troops to go fight, you're claiming, Russians.
I mean,
I don't know how you even... to me, I'm stammering. I'm so bewildered that an American leader could be this inappropriate. And America yawn. This was only in one of my 15 news feeds, and it was the last story.
But Yada, he already committed the worst crime in Egypt and in Libya.
Yes, that's true.
He has already committed the worst crime. Libya is dysfunctional. The whole of North Africa is dysfunctional. Iraq is dysfunctional. And
Syria is dysfunctional. Yemen is dysfunctional. Right.
All because of Obama.
Correct. He began World War III. World War III with his speech in Cairo, just as Neville Chamberlain began World War II with his concession of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler.
Absolutely. By the way, he wants to sell Israel also.
Of course.
Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
When they speak, when the Europeans and the American government speak about peace with the Arabs, between Israel and the Arabs, peace with which partner, I would like to know. I want to know. Since Hamas says in the charter that they want to exterminate Israel and the Jews,
right.
The PLO is the same thing.
Right.
The Arab League is the same thing.
Right.
With whom should Israel talk peace? I would like to know.
Yeah. Now, that's why I would like to get to the next statement. America's media is having a feeding feast on this notion that Netanyahu backtracked on what he had said pre- and post-election. I'd like to read to you what he said pre-election, and we can talk about that, and we'll then consider what he said post-election. I don't think he backtracked one iota. But let's consider what he said pre-election. Netanyahu pronounced earlier in the week that he would not allow the creation of a Palestinian state, is what the media is reporting today. And it goes on to say something which not only Obama supports, but is a key demand of the Palestinians for any peace agreement. Now, here's what he actually said. Anyone who is going to establish a Palestinian state, anyone who is going to evacuate territories today, is simply giving a base for attacks to radical Islam against Israel, he said. This is the true reality that was created here in the past few years. End quote.
It is a reality. The Israelis left Gaza. They made no conditions. They left Gaza. And who did it? Sharon, one of the most so-called aggressive of all of the Israelis. He left Gaza. What happened?
Yes.
Hamas.
Right.
They left the south of Lebanon. What happened? Hezbollah.
Yes.
The records are there for anybody to see, but it is obvious that the Europeans and the American governments are in cahoots with the Muslims and the Arabs. There's no question about it.
Oh, it has to be, because there is no way that anybody who is in a position of power could be stupid enough, A, to believe that there's a Palestinian, B, to believe there's a Palestinian state, C, to believe that you can negotiate with Muslims regarding Israel and that they will treat Israel peacefully, four, that Muslims will ever recognize a Jewish state, or five, that the history of Muslims since Hudaybiyah and Muhammad has ever been other than we will lie and cheat on all international treaties so that we can make you easier prey, and then we will attack and destroy you.
You know, this is the remarkable part. You know, and I know, and we are reading exactly the same scripture. The Muslims are reading the same scripture, but the European leaders and the Obama administration is oblivious to anything that we're saying.
Yeah, you're looking at this, and everything Benjamin Netanyahu said is true. He says, today, the circumstances are clear, that if we were to withdraw from East Jerusalem, if we were to withdraw from anywhere in the West Bank, all it would do is provide a haven for Muslims who would seek to destroy us. You know, it's interesting that the United States says you can't negotiate with a terrorist, and it says you can't pay a terrorist for the release of a captive. How is it then that the United States plays...
Every single time. But Obama has done that every single time. Yeah. He broke every single rule that the United States put forth.
Yeah. The United States still declares Hamas a terrorist organization. The PLO is a terrorist organization. The PLO controls the West Bank. Hamas controls Gaza. Why is it then the United States is negotiating not only with, but on behalf of these two terrorist organizations and providing them with billions of dollars if its policy is we don't negotiate with terrorists?
It's called duplicity and hypocrisy.
Yeah. And in this case, it's on the single most deadly issue of our time. And if you're listening and you don't care about Israel, well, that's your call. But I want to tell you this, that Israel is vastly more the canary in the mine shaft than was Czechoslovakia before World War II. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The statements by the American media make it sound like there's, in fact, the headlines often read, they do so explicitly in CNN, to say that Benjamin Netanyahu is contradicting himself. This is from the New York Times, Dateline Jerusalem. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel on Thursday tried to backtrack from his pre-election declaration that no Palestinian state would be established on his watch. But his new assertions appear to do nothing to assuage an infuriated Obama administration. Well, you know what he actually said in his clarification, and it's brilliant. He says, I didn't say that I would not allow one. What I said was that the situation has changed, and that the situation now is that anyone who is advocating a Palestinian state is advocating a base for radical Muslims to attack Israel. And he went on to say that he still feels that a two-state solution, and I don't, however, and I don't think he does actually either, that a two-state solution is best, but only if each party recognizes the other party's right to exist.
Absolutely.
And only if the other party is willing to live peaceably in a non-militarized condition. And those have always been the terms for a quote-unquote mythical Palestinian state. And he says, there is no chance they will be unmilitarized. Look at their current situation, and there's no chance that they're going to recognize Israel's right to be a Jewish state. He says, so the reality is that it isn't possible. That's not backtracking.
No. Do you mind if I explain to our listeners the background, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Well, I'll reiterate what you said. The news media and politicians have recently been reiterating the mantra, since 1967 that the only equitable resolution to the Arab-Israeli conflict is a two-state solution. Now I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. Is this a new idea? Before I address this particular question, we must find out if there ever was a political entity called Palestine and its people Palestinians. Since finding the answer to these two questions will help us all to deal with the issues in an intelligent and judicious manner. Ladies and gentlemen, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And the humanity assiduously repeats it in almost every generation. Most of the people that we know of, such as the Babylonians, Assyrians, Greeks, Persians, Romans, Egyptians, etc., have left their mark on history with their writings and their monuments. The Palestinian people obviously should have also left their mark. Let me demonstrate the accuracy of my statements. If our academics, historians, politicians, and others are so sure that Palestine and its people go back throughout most of recorded history, one would expect them to be able to answer a few basic questions about that country of Palestine and its people. For example, when was Palestine founded and by whom? What language did the Palestinians speak? What writings did they have? What manuscripts have they left? What was their religion? Where are their temples? What monuments attest to their existence? What were its borders? What was the name of its capital? What were its major cities? What is the name of the currency that they used? What was its form of government? What achievements had they accomplished, those Palestinians? What other peoples did Palestine interact with? Are there any archaeological sites that one can name? Where can one find the recorded history of these people? Whom did they conquer or were conquered by? Was Palestine ever recognized by a country whose existence at that time or today leaves no room for interpretation? Can anyone name at least five Palestinian leaders before Arafat? And finally, since there is no such recognized country today, what caused its demise and when did it occur? You know, these questions are very simple. Now I shall answer the question regarding the two-state solution.
And by the way, you must have gone through 50 criterion for determining the existence of a race and state. And not one of them can be answered in favor of Palestine. You know when the concept of Palestine was first conceived? In fact, when we get back, and before you share more about the fallacy of a Palestinian state, I'll share with you when the concept of Palestine was first used, by whom, and under what conditions. The story is interesting. It tells us that America and the West aren't the first who've attempted to deceive. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. To continue the thought with IQ Arvasulik, it was Hadrian. Hadrian thought that he could lure Jews back into Israel because the Romans in 70 CE had destroyed the temple. In fact, they hauled many of the Jews back with the loot from the temple, and they used the Jews as slaves and the money confiscated from the temple to fund and build the Colosseum, the most decadent building in human history. And then Hadrian, following that in 133, came back to Jerusalem, stood on the Temple Mount, now deprived of its temple. Of course, you'd have to explain that to Allah and Muhammad, because they both claimed it was still there, and said that that he called Jews back to rebuild it. He was only calling them back because he wanted to get them all in one place and kill them. And then when they returned, he says, oh, by the way, I want to rename the place. We're going to name Jerusalem after me. And we're going to build a temple not to Yahweh here, but we're going to build a temple to me here. And in addition to that, the name of the place is no longer the province of Yehuda. We're going to call it Philistia. And he came up with the name because someone in his group and talking with Jews, found out that the enemy of the Jews were the Philistines, and that the Philistines had been annihilated around 600 BCE by today's Assyrians. So he just renamed the place over a now extinct enemy. That's when the name was first used.
How many people do you think know this out of 6, 7, 8,000 million people?
I would say that the number is in the range of 1 in a million. And what I just shared with you, IQ, is irrefutable. It's easily ascertained.
Yeah.
And you might say, okay, but people don't care about Israel because most people are anti-Semitic. And that most people, and I know you don't like the term anti-Semitic because the descendants of Shem could also include Arabs, but it's actually Shem means name. So it's in opposition to the name, and the name is Yahweh, and you couldn't find people more in opposition to the name of God, Yahweh, than those who despise Yahudim, which is the actual word for the race that of people known as Israelites. It's easy to find, but I just assume that most people prefer to be ignorant.
Yes. Well, let's discuss the two-state solution.
Okay. I don't, by the way, just when you say two-state solution, I cringe.
I know. But I have to talk to the American public who don't cringe.
Right.
68 years ago, there was a resolution by the United Nations for a two-state solution. I'm talking about 68 years ago. Hence, all the bullcrap emanating from the Arab and their supporters willfully and with malice aforethought ignore this fact.
Yes.
If the people arbitrarily and mistakenly calling themselves Palestinians are anything but generic Arabs and Muslims from all of the Arab and Muslim world, if they really have a genuine ethnic identity that gives them the right for self-determination, why did they not declare their independence between the years 1948 to 1967?
For two reasons. For two reasons, IQ. Well, one reason was that the West Bank was controlled by Jordan and was part of Jordan, and Jordan didn't want to give it up. And Gaza was controlled by Egypt, and Egypt didn't want to give it up.
Exactly.
So they had no interest in creating a so-called Palestinian state because they controlled both the territories and didn't want to give them up. But, IQ, have you ever engaged in a business negotiation? Any contract negotiation? Buy or sell a home or a property or conduct a business
deal? Of course.
Okay. In a business negotiation, if you reject the terms of an offer, does that offer stand?
Not at all. Never.
That's right. Never. Under no circumstances. So when the Muslims in unison rejected UN 242 and went to war against Israel in 1948, they rejected the terms of UN 242. They're not binding now on Israel. They're not binding on anyone because one of the two parties rejected them. Now for them to say, now we want them imposed, is would be against all standards related to contracts.
Yeah, then may I just correct you?
Sure.
Please. Mm-hmm. It was Resolution 181. 242 was after 1967.
Oh, okay.
No, no, it's important because just in case some jackass will say that we are misleading them.
Okay, good.
The UN Resolution 181 decreed in 1947 that the British mandate over Palestine should be terminated on the 15th of May 1948 and that the territory should be divided between Arabs and Jews. By the way, not once is there any mention by the United Nations of a state called Palestine or a people called Palestinians? Yeah. Even the refugees after 1948 were called Arab refugees, not once Palestinian refugees.
Right.
In spite of the fact that Jewish part of the territory was disjointed, the one that the United Nations agreed to, and almost impossible to defend in the long term, the Jews accepted, but the Arabs in and outside of the Palestinian mandated territory refused to allow any Jewish state to exist. And as Abdul Rahman Azam Pasha, the first Secretary General of the Arab League, asserted that the establishment of a Jewish state would lead to a war of extermination and momentous massacre which will be spoken of like the Mongolian massacres and the Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 15th of May 1948, as Israel declared its independence, Arab armies from Jordan, Syria, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia converged upon the hours-old state of Israel,
mm-hmm.
with the single purpose of exterminating it and its youth. After a year of fighting, they agreed to an armistice, by which time Israel had already gained more territory than was allocated for her.
Yep.
Let us look at more facts.
Yep. By the way, UN 242 would then be exactly the same as 181. 181, accepted by the Jews, rejected by the Muslims, and the Muslims attacked. 242, the Muslims did the same thing. They rejected it by a declaration of war.
Correct. From 1948, ladies and gentlemen, till 1967, a long period of 19 years, there were no Israelis in the West Bank or Gaza. There were no settlements, and there was no so-called Jewish occupation. Why did these so-called Palestinians not declare their independence after 1948, but allowed themselves to be occupied, yes, I repeat, occupied by the Jordanians in the West Bank and the Egyptians in Gaza? Why did the media and academia in the West not mention that occupation and oppression, not even once during the whole of 19 years? Why did not the UN have a single resolution about it during 19 whole years? Why did this allegedly proud and ancient people, so-called Palestinians, wait until after the Arabs suffered their ignominious and devastating defeat in the Six-Day War of 1967 at the hands of Israel? Did they, all of a sudden and miraculously, find their alleged peoplehood and nationhood? Ladies and gentlemen, the truth should be obvious to everyone who wants to know it. Arab countries have never abandoned the dream of destroying Israel. They still cherish it today. Having time again and again failed to achieve their evil goal with military means, they decided to fight Israel by proxy. For this purpose, they transformed the Arabs of Judea, Samaria, and Gaza into an ad hoc group and cynically called them the Palestinian people.
Mm-hmm.
How else can one explain the refusal by Jordan and Egypt, as you mentioned a few seconds ago, to unconditionally accept back the West Bank and Gaza respectively? They refused them.
Right.
The so-called Palestinians have only one publicly and repeatedly declared motivation: the destruction of Israel. And that, as far as I'm concerned, is not good enough reason to consider them a nation. In conclusion, can anyone show the world any proof to indicate if there ever was an entity called Palestine and its people Palestinians? And if not, why not? I rest my case.
Yeah, it's so clear. And the bottom line here, too, is that this is not an Israeli-Arab conflict. It has nothing to do with Arab. Has everything to do with Islam. And to put Israel first as if Israel has been the aggressor. Israel has never been the aggressor. The Muslims have always been the aggressors. Muslims have attacked Israel with everything they have since Muhammad first created Islam. His first victims were Jews. He annihilated three Jewish communities.
Yeah, and the second victims were Christians. And
right.
We have a repeat performance now. First,
correct.
They started with the Jews after 1948.
Yep.
There are no Jews in the Arab countries. Only a few thousand maybe left in Morocco. And now, the last few years, they have been exterminating the presence of Christianity everywhere in the Muslim and the Arab world.
Correct. Following Muhammad's footsteps. Doing
absolutely
exactly what he said he would do. And none of this is difficult to find. All you have to do is to read the Islamic history as it is presented in their scriptures in the Quran and Hadith, and it's all laid out for you. And so,
my question to you, sir, why are the European leaders and the European peoples so hateful of Israel and the Jews and less fearful of the Muslims? I cannot understand.
I think it's a combination of two reasons. One is that Muslims have universally used terrorism, and terrorism is designed to make people fearful. That's the tactic that the PLO and Hamas have used since their beginning. To give them a state is to reward terrorism and cowering in fear of it. When you do that, you always lose. You lose everything. The second reason is that Europe, for about 1,400 years, was under the control of the Roman Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church grew out of the same mindset of Hadrian. The Roman Catholic Church, established by Constantine and Theodosius, was absolutely, wholly, and completely anti-Jew. And so Christianity has continued this myth that the Jews are evil, when Yahweh's position is, they're my chosen people. If you're in opposition to them, I am in opposition to you. So it's a combination of those two things.
I accept that. But how could they be so blinded that their own countries, their women are being raped and used as sex slaves?
Right.
It's 24 hours a day in Europe, they're mentioning it.
Yeah.
That every Christian in every Muslim country is being slaughtered and subjugated.
Right.
How far can anybody go without waking up? I don't get it.
Well, we'll talk about why people don't wake up, why evidence and reason, why a factual discussion of history isn't sufficient to get people to be opposed to their governments when their governments are doing things that are absolutely immoral and suicidal. We'll be back with that when Shattering This continues. IQ Arasuli is a bright man. He has taken the time to do the research, and he has formed irrefutable conclusions. And he, like I, am curious as to why others haven't been willing to do it, because in this particular case, understanding Islam and understanding the correlation between Islam and what and the terror that Muslims perpetrate is life and death. Our world is going to be destroyed because far too few people are opposed to Islam. And so you asked, all right, that's the fact that the Roman Catholic Church grew out of the governance of Rome and the mindset of Rome, which perpetrated its two most savage wars against Jews. That's one thing. And, you know, they go off and say that the Jews killed their God. And they say that constantly, that the Jews killed their God. Well, first of all, if your God can be killed by a Jew, then the Jews must be stronger than your God. That's probably not a good place to start. And the fact is their Jesus Christ, who is actually Yahusha, was a Torah observant Jew. But beyond all of that, the reason that people today who are not so resolutely Christian are still opposed to Israel, Israelis, and are unwilling to consider these evidence and reason IQ is because of political correctness. It is pervasive throughout Europe and the United States. It's become the national religion of virtually every country in Europe and in the United States. It is the religion of politics. It's the religion of the media. It's the religion of academia. And people have been taught, have been indoctrinated not to be judgmental. So they're not capable of being discerning, of being discriminating, of exercising good judgment. So evidence is no longer of value to them because they're incapable of being reasonable.
If this is the case, and if this is the case, there is no way on earth we can win against Islam.
That is correct. That is correct.
Although we, the nation of infidels, Ummat al-Kuffar, 80% of humanity, can eradicate, if we wanted to, we can eradicate Muslims physically, or we can quarantine them.
Correct.
We have the choice.
Right.
We have the ability to do so, and yet our leaders are not doing either of them.
Well, one of them is appropriate and moral. The other one is unnecessary and inappropriate.
Correct, but they are available.
Yes, but the only, and by the way, the Muslims would eradicate all non-Muslims. So don't think that we're playing with an enemy that somehow is holding the moral high ground. They will eradicate everyone who disagrees with them, who is not submitted to Islam. But the fact is that the smartest thing to do with a disease as contagious as Islam, as deadly as Islam, is to quarantine it. And not only to quarantine it so that Muslims are not allowed out of Islamic countries into non-Islamic countries, and Islam becomes illegal in non-Islamic countries, but that we stop doing business with Islamic countries and especially stop providing them with weapons.
They will collapse within.
Yes.
They will implode, literally implode. They will eradicate each other.
That is correct. They will kill each other. What is the Syrian civil war? Is the Syrian civil war, does it have a political component or is it wholly and completely religious?
Completely religious. And the same thing is happening now in the Yemen.
Yeah. And by the way, in Iraq?
Oh, of course.
Is it a political civil war or is it completely and totally religious?
Yeah. No, it's a given.
Yes. In Yemen, in Iraq, and in Syria, it is simply Muslims fighting one another, Sunni via Shia. But in places like Northern Africa and through Northern Africa, which are resolutely Sunni Islam, there's still a religious war going on between those who are Muslims and those who are fundamentalist Muslims.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was, in fact, the news this afternoon, two attacks in two mosques. Mm-hmm. Now, what I want the Americans to understand,
this is in Yemen, in addition to the museum attack.
If a Muslim can blow another Muslim in a mosque, what the hell do you think they're going to do to Christians and Jews? I want to know.
Yeah. Charlie Hebdo.
Why are people so completely and utterly stupid? I mean, stupid. Not ignorant. They're stupid.
Yeah.
You can see what's happening. You can watch what they're doing. You can listen to them telling you they're going to kill you.
Right.
And you smile.
Right.
People are smiling.
Between Boko Haram and the Islamic State, they have now kidnapped somewhere in the range of 10 to 20,000 little girls whom they are using as sex slaves. And you don't seem
to
care.
Mostly Christian.
Right. And you don't seem to care. That tells me that morally, you're dysfunctional.
Yes.
If you don't care about what IQ and I are saying, then you are morally compromised. You've become immoral, you've become irrational. And it's largely because you've chosen to be ignorant. Thank you, IQ. I appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.